Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to today's Multiple Sclerosis Accessible Design Teleconference. All parties are currently in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, a question-and-answer session will be conducted at the moderator's discretion. At that time, if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, please press 7 only once on your touchtone keypad. I would now like to turn the conference over to your moderator, Ms. Kathy Goss.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kathy Goff, and I'm the Programs Director for the National MS Society Eastern North Carolina Chapter. I'd like to welcome you all to our call tonight. Our chapter, along with several others throughout the Southeast, are collaborating on our teleconference, Accessible Design. Our call tonight will consist of a presentation and then a period for question and answers. After the presentation is over, the conference call operator will again direct you on how to ask a question. Please note that this presentation is being recorded and a CD will be available for loan from your chapter in a few weeks. At this time, I'd like to introduce our speakers. First, we have Mike Carter. He earned a business degree at Eastern Kentucky University and worked in residential and commercial construction for several years before earning his master's degree in occupational therapy from the University of North Carolina. He has worked at Wake Med Hospital in Raleigh, North Carolina, in acute rehab services, and at the Center for Universal Design at NC State University. While at Universal Design, he managed the Safe and Accessible Modifications for Independence program. Mike also participated in plan reviews for homeowners and provided product information through the center's 800 home modification information number. He has also traveled internationally with the center, presenting home modification trainings for a variety of audiences. Mike has returned to Wake Med as an occupational therapist in the inpatient rehabilitation hospital, where he continues to provide home assessment services by combining his knowledge of residential structures and the human condition to help people remain in their homes as long as possible. Dick Duncan has spent 25 years in the field of architectural and product accessibility and universal design in residential, public, and transportation environments. His extensive experience in the design, cost, materials, and products in residential and non-residential settings. His work includes the subjects of affordable housing, home and repair financing, and transportation accessibility, as well as community design for constituencies that include people with disabilities and aging households. Mr. Duncan has worked at two of the nation's preeminent organizations in the field, the Adaptive Environment Center in Boston, Massachusetts, and the Center for Universal Design in North Carolina. He has also been an associate with the Andreas Gerontology Center at the University of Southern California. He is a graduate of Tufts University and the Planning Program at the Department of City and Regional Planning at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Gentlemen, I'd like to turn the call over to you at this time.
Thank you, and thank you all for calling in and taking part in this teleconference on accessible design. I hope the information we give you today is helpful in your endeavors. We do have a short amount of time and lots of information to give out, so hopefully we'll have a few minutes at the end to ask some questions. You can follow along on your handouts that everyone should have. It's from the PowerPoint. And tonight's focus will be on home modifications, although the information speaking about, and Dick and I will be speaking about, applies to new housing as well. So let's go ahead and get started. Your first slide is accessible design and talks about what you need to know to plan and implement a long-lasting and functional home modification. And we chose those words very carefully, long-lasting, meaning that if you're going to modify your home, you should do it once. So you don't have to come back in 10 years and redo it to fix something that got overlooked. And the functional part comes from my OT background, being function being is a big part of what we do with our patients, trying to improve their function. On to slide two, again, this is carefully worded. Accessible design is creating a space where the desired outcome will provide greater functional independence for those living in the home. And this may include a combination of structural, non-structural, assistive technology applications. I'm using the term accessible design here as a catch-all term. There's many words and definitions out there of accessible design, smart design, universal design, life stage design, aging in place. and much, much more, but I just want to use accessible design as a catch-all term tonight. And for our context, we'll deal mostly with the three most asked questions I get at the hospital. But quickly, greater functional independence is underlined on your definition there. And again, that goes back to the OT program with most, with many people modifying their homes and a regular home modification just for improve the looks of your home. You don't include function as much. It's not on the high end as it would be in a home modification for a disability. We're looking specifically to improve function here. And you'll notice it says for those living in the home, a common mistake a lot of people make is that when they talk about a home modification, they assume the person who only is going to benefit from the home modification is the person who has a disability, when in fact everyone who is living in the home and or whoever comes to visit in the home or work in the home may benefit. And finally, we talked about structural, non-structural assistive technology applications. A home modification can be as small as adding a grab bar or a light switch to adding a whole new addition onto your home. And one of the issues here is that sometimes you can design this beautiful space that it still doesn't quite work right. Assistive technology comes in where you maybe, for example, need a computer system to access the lighting and the electronics in the house. And the three questions I get at the hospital most often are, how am I going to get into the house, the home entry, and what am I going to do about my bathroom? And there's the kitchen. That becomes sort of a side note a lot of times. And then there's that dollar question. Getting started, because this can be expensive, the questions that you must ask yourself before getting started on a home modification is paramount. That's where your money is best spent up front. You're going to have to ask yourself some pretty tough questions and look at the situation carefully before you decide to put a lot of money into your home. First thing you need to do is look at your physical and your personal needs. Is what's going on with you a temporary or a chronic condition? Temporary meaning maybe you broke your leg and you'll be down 6 to 8 weeks, or is it a chronic condition such as some diabetes or, you know, aging you can consider maybe a chronic condition as well. What are you trying to do with your modification? Are you trying to improve your independence? And a lot of you guys out there, you may not believe it, but yes, your wife may not want to do all the work for you anymore. She may not want to put your socks on for you. You may not want to give you a bath, even though you may like that. Do you want to return to or create a new role for yourself? That's especially for people with devastating injuries. How are they going to get around their home? How are they going to make a living? And how are they going to function in their family with all the changes that are being made or have been made by their injury and the home as well? Will there be some caregiver assistance needed? And that can go into how much space you need to plan for the bathroom, how much space you need in the home, how much storage space. Do you need a separate entry? Do you need to add a room? Will this person be living there? Do they need alerting devices? Those kind of things. You can see how these questions can cascade. And are we also looking for ease of living for all involved? And again, you're talking about the people who live in the home with the person with the disability who is the focus of this modification. Will what you do, will that free up time for other people? And will it release them from anxiety of having constant care? Those kind of questions. And those are good things. Slide four, determining your needs. We looked at the personal and physical needs. What about the home? You need to look at your home and decide how, you know, and think about how long do I plan to stay here? If you plan to stay forever, you know, from now until, you know, time comes to an end for you all, then it's a good thing to look for the long-term modifications that you can do once and hopefully it increase the value of your home. And they may be a little bit more expensive, but in the long term they pay off. And then the other question you want to ask is, why do I want to stay? AARP has done many studies where they've asked people why are they wanting to stay or how long do they want to stay in their current home, and I believe it runs about, what's it, 84%, Dick, where people say, I want to live in this home as long as I can and forever. It doesn't matter if it's a trailer, it doesn't matter if it's a mansion, it doesn't matter if it's a shack, they're going to stay in this home. with those kind of questions, what is the condition of the home? And the underlying question, is the home worth it? Are you going to put $30,000 into a bathroom in a $60,000 house? And that's something that needs to be looked at. Some people say, well, I don't care. You know, I'm going to live here, and I don't care what the home is worth. It's going to make my life much easier, and that's a perfectly good answer for that. Will the home fit your needs even after you're modified? Will you be very comfortable, and will everyone be met everybody's needs? Or is it going to be still small, or is it still going to be cold, or will you still be just getting by even though you've done some major work to your home? You need to look at community services. Are you way out in the country away from services? Are you willing to deal with that? It's nice to have community services close by, like the fire department, hospitals, doctors, grocery stores, banks, that kind of thing. And lastly, what is the final disposition of the house? Meaning, what do you plan to do with that home after you're done with it? Are you planning on giving it to the kids? Are you going to sell it? Is it part of a nest egg for someone else? Which, that again determines some of your design and how much money you're going to put into the home. Let's go on to number five here, financial feasibility. And these are some questions. You got to crunch the numbers. Does it make financial sense to do what I'm getting ready to do to this home? Am I going to put a lot of money into this home and going to price it out of the market in my neighborhood? Are you going to put, like I said, you maybe put $70,000 into a $100,000 home, and all of a sudden you have a $170,000 home that doesn't sell very well in your neighborhood? Again, the answer could be, I don't care. I'm going to live here, and I'm going to be, and this is where I want to stay. Another question we get a lot, is there finance available for this kind of work? And Dick will be speaking to that later on. And there's some interesting comments he has. Do you have the finances it takes to do this right? Am I going to be able to get a hold of the money to do this right? A lot of times there's sticker shock involved when you're talking about remodeling homes. I mean, a grab bar can range from getting a grab bar. One grab bar can range from $90 to $300 to be put in. So you may end up having to prioritize your needs or maybe even do this home modification in stages. So don't think you have to do it all at once, as long as you have a plan. And then again, this last question goes back to your disposition. What about the resale value of the home? What I'm getting ready to do to this home, is it going to enhance the value of the home? And in today's market, if you do it right, that's a good possibility that you are. There's a lot of people who are looking for aging-in-place homes. And if you have a home that will support someone while they grow old, as they age, then, yes, there is a pretty good market out there. If you make it very institutionalized or very specific to a certain disability, that does reduce your market value, but there are markets out there. Are some realtors who specialize in homes for people with disabilities. Moving on to slide six, and who should be involved with making all these plans? And there's more than you would think. There's the spouse, of course, or the significant other, and because this other person will be living with you, and a lot of times the spouse is the one who's being the caregiver. And the spouse may have different design ideas than you do. You may be very utilitarian. Your spouse may be a little bit more, let's make this look good, those kind of things. The family. How is what you're going to do to the home going to affect the family? Is it going to affect their way of your teenager, for example? Is that still going to invite people over to see the movies and that kind of thing? Is there going to be a caregiver involved? I spoke to that real briefly a second ago about the caregiver having special needs. It depends. Are you going to have a caregiver who's coming in for 3 or 4 hours a day, or are you going to have a live-in caregiver? And then how can you provide for that caregiver as well? Your realtor you would like to stay in touch with, they can give you pretty good information on what sells, what do people look for when they're looking for a home for what you're getting ready to do to it, for a home for disabilities. Your banker, of course. Your banker can give you some ideas about financing. And, right now is a decent time to do any kind of home modifications, as we just found out in my own home here. your therapist, your physical therapist, and your occupational therapist are very important in the home design process and the information process, because they can flesh out the information that's being given the builder as to why certain things are being done. And you can also, these folks can also give you a pretty good idea about the progress, the expected progress, or the typical progress of the disability that you may have encountered. There's you know, the spinal cords have their own kind of progression. People with disability, people with diabetes, for example, you can expect certain things to happen in, you know, myasthenia gravis, those kind of things. Gives you a real good idea about what to plan for that you may not have thought about. We get a lot of people who tend to plan for the moment, and they'll design a modification to fit their needs as they are now, forgetting that they may be growing a little older at some point, and that their what their condition may have some implications that need to be aware of in the future. And of course, there's your building professionals, and these are the people you don't want to knock out of the of any kind of a design process at all. These are people who know how to get things done. They know the materials. They know the timelines. They know the cost, and they're a lot of builders are design and build. And they can, once you get your plan together and start getting people to come in and take a look at what you want to do, they could offer suggestions and really be very, very helpful in tweaking things and maybe even saving some money in some places. Okay, so once you've asked all these questions and you feel pretty comfortable with what you've come up with, you've decided you're going to stay or you're deciding to go to build, it's time to start your planning. And the number one question we get at the hospital for new homes and remodeling is, you know, a ramp. How am I going to get into my home? And I have to remind people there's more ways to get in and out of your house than there than just a ramp. I'll speak to ramps very quickly here. As your therapist may tell you, that a ramp may not be appropriate for everyone. Everyone thinks a ramp is the gold standard for getting into the home, but the a ramp is inappropriate for certain people, and your therapist can tell you about that. Part of that questioning is this going to be a permanent or a temporary installation? You can rent ramps. There are rental companies out there, and you can build a ramp that you know is going to be temporary. Permanent installations are for more chronic and long-term type issues. There's been a study out there that found that the average lifespan of a ramp is about 6 years, and that 6 years figure comes from not being so much the ramp falling apart, but as the people who are using the ramp no longer need that ramp for what other reason. There are some very particular things you need to know about a ramp. Number one is the ratio, the slope is very important, and you'll see there it says 1 in 12 slope or less is ideal. 1 in 12 means for every inch up to the threshold, every inch in vertical height, you should have at least 12 inches of sloped surface. And that's been a that comes from a study done from the Center of Universal Design that found that that 1 in 12 is a very good slope for meeting lots of people's needs. There are a lot of building codes will call for 1 in 12 slope, and that's about the only code you're going to find that goes directly to your home with accessibility. And I'll speak to more of that in just a moment. You can do 1 in 14, 1 in 16. For every inch up, you have 16 inches, those kind of things, a more gentle slope. What you have to watch, though, is be careful that you don't make it so long that becomes the length of the ramp becomes an issue. Aside from the slope, you need to have level landings at the top and the bottom, of course. The level landing at the top by the door is very important for the ease of opening the door. And you would know what I'm talking about if you sit in a wheelchair on a ramp on a sloped surface and try reaching ahead and grabbing a door and opening it, you will find yourself rolling backwards very quickly. The upper landing, we like to have level with the threshold or no more than a half an inch bump up over the threshold. And this is a little bit hard to explain, but you want to have the landing at the top offset to the latch. Latch side of the door. You want to have more space on the latch side of the door than you do the hinge side of the door. So if you, let's say you put your ramp up to the, build your ramp up to the door and have your landing up there, put one end of the one side of the landing, you know, maybe 6 inches past the latch, and have the other side, one side even with the hinges, and the other side leaving more room on the latch side. So you may have 18 to 24 inches on the latch side to help you maneuver inside the door. Your local codes will determine the height of the safety railing on your ramp or your porch, and that all is generated by the height off the ground. And those are safety issues that are not related so much to a disability. Your handrail, however, the safety rail is the rail is the height. You have to see the flat part of a ramp, of a top rail. The handrail, if you want a handrail for holding onto while you go up the ramp, you can put that at any height you want. There are no codes that go along with that. And do not let anybody tell you, say, the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA, dictates where you put railing heights or grab bar heights, for example, in your bathroom, because the American with Disabilities Act does not apply to your single-family home. It applies to public buildings only. That's not to say that the ADA does not have good ideas and it's a good guideline, a good place to start, but it does not have a direct relationship to your home. Other little tips are you keep the balusters up off the ramp so you can sweep dirt and those kind of and debris off the ramp. Do not use plywood outside the home. You can use it maybe inside the garage, but plywood becomes very slippery with just a little bit of dirt on it and also delaminates. And yes, I know that they make pressure-treated plywood, but it does delaminate when you put the pressure of a wheelchair onto it. Consider if you build anything out of wood, a ramp, for example, there's going to be some maintenance issues involved. You can't just build a wooden structure on the outside of your home and expose it to the elements and expect it not to deteriorate. You need to take care of it. And that's a money issue as well if you've got a tight budget. So that's why we suggest maybe building a permanent installation using concrete or backfill, those kind of things, to make it a more permanent installation. There's very little upkeep. If you do build a ramp and you do happen to build it out of wood, for at least paint it at some point to make it blend into your home to enhance the value instead of being, you know, something that people, their eyes drift to quickly. And you can do a little landscaping on it, and that makes a big difference as well. There are alternatives to ramps also. A good search term to use for Google is you put the word residential in front of elevator, residential in front of a platform lift, and residential in front of a sloped walk, and that kind of thing, and you will get plenty of hits on good information on how to build a ramp. You need to put the residential in front there, because otherwise if you just put ramp in, you'll be learning how to build a lot of skateboard ramps, which I don't think a lot of people look for. Elevators, an elevator is very expensive to retrofit to a home, but there are elevators out there that you can tack onto the outside of a home, and they look very nice, and it's much more cost efficient that way. Platform lifts are where you lift the entire wheelchair up, or a person using a walker. You can use any of these terms for search terms. A sloped walk is an alternative to a ramp. A sloped walk is basically a sidewalk, which means it's 1 in 20. And the senior steps, that's an interesting concept come up with the Minnesota Ramp book. It's a steps that is about half the size of a regular step, so it's 3 to 4 inches, and it's actually a series of platforms. It takes up about half the space of a ramp, and the downside is you have to bump up and down to access it, but it does make it an alternative if you don't have room for a ramp. And stair lifts, this is where your occupational and physical therapist will come in handy. Stair lifts are, you know, the chair that slides up and down the stairway in your home. You do need to know about, you need to have some trunk stability and those kind of things. You need to have a wide stairway. You need to have a wheelchair upstairs and downstairs, things to think about. Going on to doorways, most of the accessible design the plans you'll find call for 36-inch doors, which is, again, that's the gold standard. But a lot of times when you're in a modification-type situation, you're not able to get a door 36 inches, especially in the bathrooms where there may be counters or closets in the way. What you can do is to find out the width of, if you're using a wheelchair or a walker, find out the width from outside edge to outside edge, and then include some room for knuckles, and you may be able to get away with a 34-inch door, maybe even a 32-inch door. keeping in mind that just because it's a 36-inch door does not mean you have 36 inches of clear space. You may have about 34 and a half. And you look in your on your graphic here, you can see why. If you look to the left, a regular hinge, when you open the door, the doorway stands inside the door a little bit. And that reduces your entry by 1.5 to 2 inches. So a 36-inch door will give you about 34. Your alternative would be to take the door off or widen the doorway, which will cost you anywhere from $100 to $600. But sometimes you do not have room to widen a doorway. If all you need is that couple inches, you can use a thing called a swing clear hinge. That's a search term, swing clear hinge. You can see in the picture on the right there, the swing clear hinge is attached to that door, and you can see how the door is dropped back behind the molding. So you get, if that's a 36-inch door, you get about 35 inches of opening there, maybe 35 and a half. Good way to save money. You can get those anywhere from $20 to $60, depending on where you're looking. Moving on into the bathrooms, a lot of questions we go around grab bars and toilets. When you leave the hospital, you get a clamp-on toilet seat, which is the elevated toilet seat, which is, you know, it's a little ugly. It's a little scary to guests. It can get nasty, and it's not something you can throw into the dishwasher and clean up. So it's something I don't care for, but it's a good temporary situation. If you need something more permanent, you can go down to Home Depot and Lowe's, and you can buy a comfort height toilet. They're no longer called handicap height anymore. Some people are, but most of them are comfort height. They wear from 17 to 19 inches, and that's the permanent solution. You can get those for about $250, and you can get them installed for about $100. It's not too bad. Now, if you're thinking about it's going to be a semi-permanent installation, those two graphics you have there, one is the Toilevator and one is the Medway toilet riser, those raise the whole toilet up, and are particularly handy if you have a toilet that you really, really like for whatever reason. Maybe you like the design, or maybe you like the way it flushes. But you can raise the toilet up, and then you can get raised toilet seats anywhere from 1/2 inch to 3 inches. You can custom design or custom build the height of your toilet, which is very handy for people with who are transferring out of wheelchairs, for example. Moving on to grab bars, I'm very specific about grab bars, what I like and what I don't like. The major issue I have with grab bars is you want to have no more than 1.5 inches between the inside of the grab bar and the wall. And that's what that illustration is showing there. Reason being, if it's any more than 1.5 inches, there's a chance you can get your hand or your wrist slid up down through there. And if you happen to slip or fall, you could actually break something or dislocate something. 1.5 to 1.25 inches width on the grab bar seems to work very well for most people. And if they get smaller, they're harder to hold unless you have child's hands or maybe arthritic hands. I do like the smaller diameter bars for installing in place of towel bars, because I can't tell you how many homes I've been into where the towel bars are missing. And because they've been, that's the first thing people grab when they're going down. So replace towel bars with grab bars, and that's a pretty good option there. Saves a lot of money. Installing grab bars is actually very difficult for, and it's a difficult concept for a lot of people. The gold standard is if you hook a grab, you screw a grab bar into a stud, or if there's blocking. If you look in your illustration there on that slide number, installing grab bars, you'll see that wooden blocking beneath that window, and builders install that, and then they put the drywall over top of that, and then screw right through everything and attach to the wood. If it's not there, and most homes are built without blocking around the toilets and around the showers, there are alternatives, and you can use the word solid mount, or secure mount, or toggler, and use the word grab bar in front of that, and you will come up with these different ideas here. Again, that is solid mount, secure mount, and toggler. The solid mount is the bottom right of that picture, and that's for a way to install grab bars in a situation where you have a molded tub surround, the kind where you can push on it and you feel like there's airspace behind there. That allows you to attach the grab bar directly to the stud. Those other two you see there allow you to attach a grab bar to a piece of drywall that has a covering on it. And what I mean by a covering is maybe a piece of tile or some sort of other covering just to make the drywall a little bit stronger. If you look to the right, the whole wall blocking, that's the best of all worlds. If you're going to gut your bathroom and take it all apart, I really like the idea of when you put 3/4-inch plywood behind the wall, so you can sheath your walls with 3/4-inch plywood, put your cement board over top of that, apply your tile to that, and then you can mount a grab bar, you can mount a seat anywhere you want, and you don't have to worry about where the blocking is going to be. Because that's one of the questions your builder is going to ask you when they're building your bathroom, is where do you want the blocking? And a lot of times you just don't know until you start using that bathroom. Another question we have, and a lot of information I'd like to give out, is about a curbless shower. And this is a good long-range modification, especially even if you don't have a disability, because if you're going to age in place, curbless shower makes it much easier to get out of the shower as you grow older. 60 inches by 42 inches is a good size shower. 60 by 60, which is 5 feet by 5 feet, is a very nice shower. You just need to remember, when you start building larger showers, they start getting colder. We do like things like offset controls, which means a lot of you have your water controls directly under the faucets and directly under the shower. There's really no reason for that except for convenience. You can have the offset controls put off to one side. Also, the offset could also, you can use the word as caregiver control. So if someone is in the shower, in a shower chair, for example, the caregiver can reach over to the right and turn on, or left, and turn on the shower without getting wet. You can see that a little bit in the curbless shower features slide to your right. There's no limit on how many controls you can actually put in the shower. If you go to some of these shower websites, you'll see, you know, they've got car washes with all the heads and all the shower controls, and you can do anything you want. Again, curbless shower, we like the whole wall blocking, plenty of grab bars, and the biggest thing you need to remember about a curbless shower is do not install a built-in bench. It gets in the way 99% of the time. I'm going to go through these last two slides very quickly so Dick can speak. Kitchens are a question that we get asked a little bit, not very often because they're so expensive. And what I've included there is some pictures from the Craft Made Passport series. You'll notice things like there's knee space under some of the working spaces. There's counters that can move. There's multiple level counters, so you can stand or seat or have the kids help out in the kitchen. A lot of pull-out shelving and pull-out pantry storage. Those things are very handy in a kitchen for accessibility. And a lot of the knee space, and a lot of these things will save you space. All right, last thing, choosing a contractor or a handyman. You're not going to find accessible design or ramps in the yellow pages. They're just not in the phone book. A lot of contractors and handymen don't label themselves as people who do those kind of jobs. If you're going to use a contractor or a handyman, it really depends on the size and type of your job. A handyman will typically be the person who's going to be installing a grab bar or a toilet or maybe even a shower. It depends on, you know, how complicated that is. Contractors like bigger jobs, and the selection of your contractor is crucial. You want to find someone who is going to listen to your needs. And hopefully, they can bring in someone who does. That's where that CAPS certification, CAPS meaning Certified Aging in Place Specialist, that is from the National Association of Home Builders. And they have a program where they specifically recommend that builders or contractors get in touch with an occupational therapist or a physical therapist about get some input on how to make this plan work for someone. And speaking of plans, if you have a plan, that is the best way to approach a contractor or a handyman. It's very important because if you want to get more than one estimate, you need to have a solid plan on paper so they'll all be on the same page literally when they make their estimates. Even if it takes a designer to get this on paper for you, that's good money spent. The best money you'll spend is up front on the design. Lastly, I would like to leave you with this. Anything is possible, especially with a home modification. What it depends on, how much hassle you're willing to put up with and how much money you're willing to spend. But anything is possible. You name the problem, and a contractor, along with OTs and these other people we mentioned, you know, in your plan can help you solve it. So I'm going to turn it over to Dick for the fourth question we get asked all along. And the question is, how am I going to pay for this? Are you ready, Dick?
Hello, Mike. Yes, thank you. I will see if I can go through my items for folks, and then we can take questions after that. First thing to mention to people is that as I was listening to Mike's presentation, I quickly numbered the slides on the handout that you may have in front of you so that we could each follow along with the slide numbers as we go forward. I realize that the handout probably doesn't have the slide numbering on it, so I've done that. You may want to do the same before I get into the meat of it. First, a little more about me. I am the executive director of the Mace Universal Design Institute in Chapel Hill, with offices in Raleigh, North Carolina as well. And our focus is pretty much exclusively built environment issues related to accessibility and universal design. We deal a lot with non-residential environments, but also a lot with housing as well, which brings me to the topic here. Another thing to mention is that I hope all of you received a handout that is a brief outline of some of the funding sources and some details and resources on that, which I'll be talking about this evening. It doesn't contain everything, but it does list a lot of resources. It has at the top of it the word infinitech.org, or the website infinitech.org, which you're welcome to go to. We've done some adaptations of it to make it more appropriate for some of the topics we'll be talking about today. So if you've got that, you can look at it afterwards. You don't need to refer to it now. In terms of funding, financing, and other resources of home modifications, in general, we're talking about things that cost more than $500 and things that need to be installed or built into your home. Things under $500 are things like assistive technology or pieces of equipment. While there are some common funding sources with home mods, are things we're not touching on today. And Mike touched on this topic, and it's something that everyone seems to deal with at some point as they're considering these options. But the funding sources and financing sources that we'll talk about today may help with the move or improve dilemma, as we call it, which is what Mike was alluding to earlier, in that at some point, given the cost and the resources you've got with a particular home modification project, people eventually get around to considering whether they want to stay where they're at now and fix it up, or move to another setting and fix it up, or not have to fix it up at all. I even hope some of these resources help you. All right, so going to slide number two. I worked for a long time at a national center that fielded questions from around the country from folks who wanted to kind of solve their own particular problems, and some of them were housing problems. When they called about housing, they tended to have three problems in particular. One was they had a particular accessibility need in their house, and they wanted some help with the design. How do I design this ramp? What's the best solution for a bathroom, and so on? Or where do I get a certain kind of product, a stove, a refrigerator, a washing machine, or something that works better for me? The second question they asked was, who can I contact in my local area? What designer or architect has experience with this? What kind of contractor knows about these kinds of issues who can help me out? The most common question we got was, where can I get some funding or some financing to help with this project? And going on to slide three, the real question that people had was that somewhere, somehow, everyone seems to have heard about some funding source that would provide some grant support, some free money for them to underwrite and help defray the cost of a home modification project. So that's what they were coming to us with, and that's the kind of questions that we were dealing with over time. So going to slide four, there's kind of good news and bad news with this. The good news is that there's lots and lots of funding sources out there that can help with home modification projects. The bad news is that they're hard to find, and they may have lots of payout restrictions. And in general, people don't save money for that good-looking ramp they've always wanted. People don't tend to come to a home modification need situation with a lot of money set aside just for a home modifications project. If they need to spend money from their own resources, it's coming from a source that people have set aside for some other purpose at some time in the past. So that's a real challenge for lots of folks, and people, I think, justifiably feel strapped if they're faced with that kind of a circumstance. The sources, while numerous, are hard to find, and you'll find even with a few sources I've listed here, there can be a long hunt. Certainly the Internet makes it easier, and you can do lots of searching online. But even when you find a source, you'll find that there are most of the time restrictions on for whom the money can be made available and for what it can be used. So depending upon where you live, there may be some sources available or not. Whether you're a homeowner or a renter can determine your eligibility for some funding sources. How old you are makes a difference. Your health and disability status also makes a difference in your eligibility for some kind of sources, as well as your income status. And I'll try to remember to note these as we go through the rest of the items on this on these handouts here. So going to slide 5, I've divided the sources for the purposes of our conversation, hope we can get through, into 5 different categories, and I'll go through these for the rest of the time we have. And just to note to you that it tends to be a moving target. What's available and what's a program or initiative in a particular location at one point in time may not be available a month later or a fiscal year later or as the calendar year turns kind of thing. So it can be a frustrating task, but just to know that if I mention something and it turns out not to be in place any longer, those things happen and things change. But what we do know about how home modifications are paid for initially is that approximately 75% of all home modifications are paid for out of pocket, which is to say people use their own funding and resources to make it happen. And some of those funding and resources are listed here in the next two slides, in slide 6 and 7. The first thing is personal income tax, or income tax in general, which is actually kind of a reimbursement system, which is to say you lay out money for a modification and you get paid back later. As far as the medical deduction is concerned, it may require a doctor's authority and a doctor's signature on a particular kind of modification in your home that's deemed medically necessary. You can take it as a deduction off your schedule and your income tax. Or if you've got your office and place of business in your home, you can take the deduction off of that, off of the business side, or in some other cases, if your landlord makes alterations that cost money for accessibility and you're a renter, your landlord could take that off of his tax form, and could be something that you inform him or her about. Other options, if you're a homeowner, are the next three bullets on slide 6. So you could do refinancing, which was a very popular item for many years. Of course, now the kind of landscape of refinancing has changed, and maybe less possible to get a refinance or a second mortgage. So too with remodeler financing. Some remodelers do act as loan originators for a project and might be able to provide you with a loan again, provided you've got the eligibility for that. What's popular now for people over the age of 62 is a home equity conversion, or what we call a reverse mortgage, which means essentially that it's a loan against the value or the remaining value of the equity in your house that you don't have to pay back and doesn't have to be paid back until your tenancy ends or until the house is sold. So those are all, kind of funding and financing mechanisms with taxes and with home equity. Moving to slide 7, there are some other options that vary highly and do change over time as well in private medical insurance. So long-term care insurance, I know some insurance policies carry provisions that will pay for some kinds of home modifications up to a certain amount, principally because the medical insurer realizes that in many cases, staying at home, remaining at home is a better option for folks than institutional care. So they'll pay for some of those. And in some cases, rarely, and this may become more and more rare these days, a medical insurance policy may pay for some home modifications on the same basis. You really have to check that out and see what works for you and what you're eligible for with your own particular policy. Some folks with whole life insurance policies can cash them in or borrow against them used for home modifications, or there's always the possibility, which is quite expensive, and again, these days, not all that sure, of an unsecured loan being possible for maybe small amounts, perhaps. You may not want to get this for $20,000 or $30,000 modification, but for low dollar amounts, it might be something you can do. Slide 8 is really a list of just a few among many, many local organizations, charitable organizations, fraternal organizations, that may play a role in helping from kind of a service provision perspective. People know about Habitat for Humanity. Some local habitats will perform home modifications in some circumstances, and there may be something called Rehabitat, which is the idea from Habitat to set up a rehabilitation kind of arm of that. Rebuild America is pretty well known, if for any other reason than under its old name, Christmas in April, and they've got a very substantial home access modifications component to what they do. Churches, other volunteer groups, largely personal connections will make the difference there. Moving quickly on to slide 9, a lot of these sources here, when you get into either federal funding for that can underwrite home modifications or state agency funding are all very income eligible specific, and so you need to be checking with them. So every state has a housing finance agency. Some of them have repair programs. You need to contact them, usually in your state capital, to see if you could be eligible for those programs and see how you get access to them. Every state has a vocational rehabilitation organization that either will provide, in some circumstances, expertise to assess your home or actually some funding and services to provide changes in your home, either through the vocational rehab group or, in many cases, what's called the independent living component of that. And as I say, they can always provide some kind of information resources. I know, for example, in North Carolina, our Division of Aging and Adult Services has a nifty little website that divides all 100 counties of the state up and tells folks what sources they might be able to seek within those counties. I don't know if other states have that same opportunity. Under federal funding sources, going to your area agency or aging or your senior council, if you're over 62, again, age eligibility, may provide funding from the Administration on Aging or some kind of health and services in that area. Also very income eligible is Medicaid services. And you pretty much know that. It's also income eligible, so a person or a household with health problems, as well as a risk of institutionalization would make you eligible for that. Under slide 11, under federal, there are some loan programs. And again, these may be subject to a lot of pressure now with the mortgage crisis we have, but either Title I or 203K loans might be eligible for purchasing and rehabbing homes or redoing your mortgage and providing enough funding in excess of that to redo your house as well at very favorable rates. If you live in rural areas, in slide 12, rural economic and community development folks, formerly known as Farmers Home Administration, has two programs that are also, I believe, income eligible, 504 and 502. 504 happens to be age specific as well. Slide 13, also income eligible. I said there are restrictions, and there are lots of restrictions. The CDBG or home program, which you can access information about through your city, town, or county housing agency, typically has income eligibility and sometimes will be paying for housing rehab if you're income eligible and have the right series of circumstances that make you appropriate for that particular program. Slide 14 is the under community, again, as a reminder of all the various civic organizations that might be appropriate for you. I think in victim assistance or workers' compensation, we're probably not needing to mention those for this crew here, given our time as well. And finally, under item 15, under renters only, this is one group here, landlord-funded alterations for tenants. I've kind of mentioned that before, but that is possible. Some landlords will do that. If you live in public housing, generally public housing authorities have an obligation to remodel your home or make an appropriate housing choice for you. Or if you live also, and this is all, you know, income eligible again, in Section 8 housing that's subsidized by HUD, there's also not some obligations on the part of the landlord to provide alterations for that. That's a very quick run through of very high points. Slide 17, and my list anyway, has my contact information. So if in this very quick run through you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them online or offline, whatever you can't get to in our question and answer session coming up now. So I guess I will turn it back to Kathy or the operator to field questions from folks if they have any.
Patty, if we can go ahead and pull for questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you have a question, please press 7 on your touch-tone keypad. Our first question comes from Daisy.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Daisy Cash. I'm in Altraville, North Carolina. I have multiple sclerosis. My situation is I live in a mobile home, and my problem is it was due to vandalism. My daughter's boyfriend shot out my windows and shot out my front sliding glass door, which is the only way that they've got to get me in and out on the gurney and onto an ambulance if I need to go to the hospital. I'm on very fixed income, and I really need the help as far as getting these things fixed. I've tried churches, and they tell me that they can't replace the windows or the sliding glass door. It costs us too much. But yet they can build the preacher a brand new house or build onto their church. I don't see why they can't, you know, help me out with a little something, you know, like that. I even said I'd be happy with plexiglass on the windows. Just so as if, you know, I could see out again instead of boards on them like I've got now.
Is that the kind of thing victim assistance would work with?
That's a good question. Victim assistance is specifically for people who've been victims of criminal activity and where the criminal activity has resulted in some kind of disabling condition. But it might be worth investigating that. What county did you say you were in?
Daisy, are you there?
No, sorry, maybe...
Your line is live, Daisy?
I'm in Sampson County.
Okay, so there may be some Sampson County. I mean, you may have explored all this, so we may be going over old territory, but I'm sure that Sampson County has a county-level housing agency or a community development agency, and they may be a conduit for some of these funds I mentioned throughout all this, may be able to refer you. I think it's great that you've explored the option of churches, and I'm really sorry that that they weren't able to help you, because it sounds like you really do have some specific needs. They happen not to be specifically kind of home access modifications, which sometimes makes folks more likely to kind of extend themselves. But it sounds like in your circumstance, you really need something, and some of these folks might be able to help you. Do you know of the – in Sampson County, is there a – where's the county seat in that county?
North Carolina.
Yeah. So, which town has the is the county seat, Sampson County?
My closest biggest town is Fayetteville Fort Bragg, and that's in Cumberland County. That's across the county line.
I see. So that's across the county line. That may not be much help to you, but I'm sure there's a county level housing agency. And they may be able to help you with that. That would be my best suggestion for you just on the phone now.
Yes, sir.
You can feel free to call me up at some of the time during the week if you need some help finding that out.
Our next question comes from Cynthia.
Hello, Cynthia.
Our next question comes from Dawn.
Hi. I want to thank you for the information. It was very helpful. Unfortunately, I don't have the handout, and I was wondering how I could get one. I've been taking notes as you've been speaking, but how can I go about getting a handout? Maybe can I get somebody's phone number and maybe give you my email address later or something?
From Dick's handout or both of ours?
Both of them, yeah. You both referred to a handout, and I just took notes as you went. But
how, get in touch with Kathy.
Actually, let me interrupt there. Okay. Cynthia, you would call your local chapter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And they will be happy to mail you or email you a copy of the handouts for
okay.
tonight's call.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Someone else.
Our next question comes from Cynthia.
Yes. I wanted their contact information to talk to both of them because I have a three-level house, and I want to know who do I need to talk to as far as modifying the house. And also about the pamphlets that they had, I wanted to get those as well.
Kathy?
Yes, again, Cynthia, you would just need to contact your local chapter, and they'll be happy to share those handouts with you.
And if you want to get a hold of Dick or I, Dick has his information on his slides, and if you want to get in touch with me, you can. Kathy, do the other MS societies have my information?
No, but I'll be happy to share that with them.
Okay. Is that good, Cynthia?
Our next question comes from Teresita.
I'm in Georgia, and I also wanted the handout. I didn't receive anything, so I guess I need to contact my local chapter.
All right. Answered your own question. Great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Rebecca.
Hello?
Hello, Rebecca.
I live in a rural area in Crenshaw County of Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is not able to, he lost his job, but he's not able to go back to work because my condition has just steadily worsened. I have multiple sclerosis. And our home is an older home. It was built in the early 1950s. So, you know, we just really need some financial help to do some modifications. And I guess just getting your handout would, you know, pretty much cover any options I have.
Well, it might be a start. This is Dick Duncan calling. And in your case, and I should have mentioned this to our first callers, that you both live in rural areas, so there are grant programs that are associated with rural economic and community development. So if you look that up in the phone book, or if you can go online and look up, you know, RECD or the Farmers Home Administration, they may even pull things up. I'm sure they have an office not far from you. You might be able to explore the grant opportunities that they might have in addition to those same options in your county or in your area for your housing agency or community development office, which are often the folks who know about these either state or federal funds that flow through to the county level. They may have some programs set up to help modify homes. And I wish you luck with that because, as I said at the beginning, it can be a frustrating search, and I have all the sympathy in the world for people who are kind of casting around. But those might be two places to start.
Rebecca, you mentioned workers' comp. Did you say that? Was that for you or your husband? Rebecca, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Did you mentioned workers' comp? Was that for your husband or for you?
No, I said my husband lost his job.
Oh, okay.
And he's
misunderstood.
He's not even, you know, of course he tried to go back to work, as many Americans have, but now, since my condition has worsened, it just wouldn't be practical for him to get a job because then we would have to try to pay for someone to
right.
be with me.
Right.
So,
look, follow Dick's information he just gave you and start asking about respite services, which would give your husband a break, and you may find some services available in your area where you can get some of your the cost of a caregiver paid for, and it might be able to give your husband some a break to be able to get back to some work.
Our next question comes from Taki.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. How you doing? Can
Good.
You hear me?
Yep, I can hear you fine.
Okay. And I missed most of this teleconference. So I guess the pamphlets that everybody was asking about, I could actually pick that up or get that information from my local chapter, correct?
That's right.
And okay, but as I stated, I missed the beginning of this teleconference. And what exactly did those, was the conversation about as far as the pamphlets? Was it about getting help for modifying your homes?
There were two parts of it. One was basically what you need to ask yourself before you start modifying your home, what kind of questions you need to ask yourself, and some basic specifications on ramps and some other information. And then Dick spoke to the financial aspect of where you might be able to find some money and money sources to help you out. And that's all available through your MS Society. If you would call them, they'll be glad to send those to you.
Our next question comes from Donna.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My husband and I are just fixing to build a house, and fortunately I had a realtor that was knowledgeable about grab bars, etc. is there a website that I can go to that has everything on it?
Well, Dick, I'm thinking the Center for Universal Design would be a very good place to start.
Yeah, I'd also be happy to email to you, Donna, some of the publications that we've produced that relate to design tips and design ideas for new homes. You have a great opportunity, if you're able to do that, is to really install some great features from the beginning. So yeah, we can. I can send you some of the resources for that as well as other websites to go to.
Yeah, so good luck, Don. That's a great opportunity, as Dick said. You can do it from the ground up. You get exactly what you're looking for.
So if you have once you get both my handout on funding sources as well as my slide show printout. Both of those have my contact information, so I'm happy to have you contact me afterwards. Email is probably the best way.
Our next question comes from Glenda.
Hey, Glenda.
Glenda, your line is live. Our next question comes from Kenna.
Kenna?
Hi, my name is Kenna Jackson.
Okay.
And I live in Milton, Florida. My county is Santa Rosa County. But what I am interested to know, I do have multiple sclerosis also.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am interested to know is there anything to make driving more accessible? Is there any equipment available?
Oh, there's plenty. There's plenty. If you will go to Google and do a search on adaptive driving or accessible driving, do you have access to a computer? Kina?
Sir.
Do you have access to a computer?
No, sir.
Can you get to a library where they would have access to a computer?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, and also the Yellow Pages and would have information on adaptive vans. There's companies out there that's all they do is make vans and cars adaptable and add adaptable driving devices. Dick and I had a colleague who basically drove her van with very little arm movement and very little hand movement. So it's just about anything's possible out there. But look for adaptive vans, adaptive driving.
Okay. I currently drive an SUV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can adapt that.
Okay. Adaptable driving?
Yep.
Yeah. The other source of information and actual assistance about that would be, I know Florida has a state vocational rehabilitation agency, and I'm not sure whether that's located in the capital or not, but they certainly have branches all over the state because we've dealt with some of them. Frequently, those state agencies also deal not just with home modifications, which I mentioned earlier, but also with vehicle adaptations of any kind, sedans or SUVs or et cetera. So they'd also be a great resource for you, and you can also get them probably through the telephone book, and then also through the library if you can get there and either talk to the reference librarian, and they're always glad to help, or you can go online.
And this will need to be our last question due to the time.
Our next question comes from Sharon.
Yes. Hi, I'm from Georgia Presentation. I'm from Eden, North Carolina. What I'm getting ready to do is I want to remodel my bathroom to be handicap accessible. I want to do it right from the beginning and would like to have a designer to come in to help me, you know, look around and tell me what they think about my area and try to help me design my bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Locally, what agency can I contact. I contacted our home builders association, and they didn't know of anybody. So who would I contact other than you and locally?
You're in Eden, North Carolina?
I'm in Eden, North Carolina.
Okay. When you talked to the Home Builders Association, did you mention the CAPS program?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, call back and try that and see if that maybe spurs their memory a little bit.
CAPS,
that's the Certified Aging in Place Specialist.
I did say that.
I did.
I sure did. I sure did. And I was real surprised that she said she didn't know what I was talking about.
Wow.
She sure did. I was just like, now, wait a minute. But, you know,
well,
I said, well, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then this is the wrong department, the wrong agency.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a little bit off the beaten track in Eden, and there may not be a specialist in your particular area. So local may be kind of hard to come by. But there are, in North Carolina, as in most other states, there are regional offices of vocational rehabilitation and independent living. I know Greenville may be the closest one to you, possibly Wilmington. I'm not clear about which is actually closer to Eden. And they will, even if they can't pay for you a bathroom modification, they will come out and for free will can assess and can make recommendations.
That's what I need. That's it. So who would I contact now?
Well, I'm just going to take a guess. I don't have the list in front of me. That Greenville probably has the closest state office of vocational rehabilitation and independent living, and that would be also would either be a web search for you on that, or it would be go to your library and have your reference librarian help you. I've been to the office, and I'm not quite sure what the staffing is these days. But I just did a meeting with these folks last week, and they reminded me that they do that. They do provide free technical assistance services. This may be the case in other states as well. They really are a terrific resource. You may have to wait. It may not be instant, you know. They may have a waiting list of folks they can get to see. But they're very interested in helping people.
And the other thing you could do to arm yourself with information is you could go to the Center for Universal Design's website. Again, do a Google search, type in the letters CUD, stands for Center for Universal Design, and they have a lot of publications that are for free, and you can also purchase some. A very good place to get to arm yourself with information so when you speak with these people that you can say, I'm particularly interested in this type of space, this type of shower, that kind of thing. And that's a real good place to start as well.
There's no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for that informative presentation. We appreciate you taking your time tonight to speak to us. I just wanted to make sure all the participants are aware that this call has, again, been recorded. It'll be available from your chapter for loan in a couple weeks. Also, please remember to contact your chapter for a copy of the handouts that we discussed on tonight's call, and then also for any resources that are in your area. After we're done with our closing comments, the operator will instruct you on an evaluation to wrap up the call. Again, thank you for participating tonight.
Please press the corresponding keys to answer the following question.
Hello.
As a result of participating on this call, I better understand how to plan and implement a home modification. Please press 1 for true or 2 for false. As a result of participating on this call, I found the financial resources discussed during the call to be beneficial. Please press 1 for true or 2 for false. As a result of participating on this call, based on the information I learned, I plan on making some changes to my home more accessible. Please press 1 for true or 2 for false. I found this call helpful and will utilize this information for my home. Please press 1 for true or 2 for false. This concludes this evening's teleconference. Everybody have a wonderful evening.